To the day today is June 2nd, 2010. My name is Keith Peppers. I will be interviewing Justin Huscher.
Yes.
Can you state your name, your occupation, where you're from, some background information for us?
My name is Justin Huscher. So far, I've had a horrible history of working customer service jobs in evil corporations. I've wanted to be a farmer for about 14 years. I have an undergraduate degree in botany, which I got from Miami University in 1998. My goal back then in 1998 was to eventually move out of the city and buy a farm when I was about 45, 50 years old, a mushroom farm specifically. I thought after graduating, I'd have the whole two-car garage, two-car kids, two everything in the middle of the suburbs. And that kind of lifestyle, gratefully, has never worked out for me. And I don't ever see myself ever wanting to leave the city in regards to rock and roll, in regards to museums, in regards to restaurants. And just the way the cards have fallen and living in Cleveland, I could realize my hopes and dreams doing the farming thing within the city and look to earn some financial money doing that.
Sounds good. How did you get involved with this project? What is this project? Can you give us some details on it?
The Reimagining Cleveland Project, it sort of fell out of the sky. It was in 2009, I don't know, March or April, something like that. I had told my wife that, you know, I was kind of sick of trying to wear business clothing and business casual clothing, and all I really wanted to do was farm. My passion was gardening, has been gardening. And I really wanted to make the move into the urban farming scene. I had been reading a lot about it. And she thought that was probably the best for me as well. So we had agreed that I'm going to start looking into properties and, you know, zoning and whatnot. And then literally about a week and a half later, I picked up the EcoWatch newspaper. And there was an ad for the Reimagining Cleveland grant. And the grant itself is mostly federal money to clean up what's called neighborhood stabilization program areas. I say clean up, that's kind of probably not the best word, but to do something positive with these areas. And with the grant, it was a wide open grant where you could almost do anything in regards to greening of Cleveland. It could be an urban farm, which is what I'm doing. It could be a community garden, which a lot of people are doing. It could be a vineyard, which about three people are doing. And it could even be so extreme as putting in parking lots that have permeable pavers that allow the water to go through instead of washing out into the watershed. So it was a wide open grant. It literally fell into my lap about a week after I was talking about becoming an urban farmer. And then last summer, I basically pursued the grant full time. And when I say pursued it, finding a property that was what I call perfect was really, really, really difficult. And eventually I found the property that I'm farming on this year.
How did you choose this topic or this project? Did you have a selection process? Did you think to yourself, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do this? Or was this the first project you decided to work on?
Well, I knew I wanted to do an urban farm. So that was the project I wanted to do. That was it specifically. I've been pretty, what you would call a relatively extreme gardener for 5, 6, 7 years now. And I knew I wanted to basically take it to another level. So it wasn't anything that I wanted to do in terms of like a permeable pavers or a vineyard. I wanted to basically create my own business and be self-sufficient and make my own money. Don't get me wrong, I love these feeder funds to get me started, but it's about me earning a living.
So do you have a job in addition to this right now?
I have a part-time customer service job that I really don't like at all. And I hope by next year to not have that and not do that and not be a part of that scene at all.
You said your wife supported you in this endeavor. Does she help you with this? Does she help garden with you?
No, not really. She helps in terms of support, both, you know, somewhat financially and emotionally. She planted some tomatoes over the weekend, but I have like 3 or 4 friends that do a lot of the dirty work. Like on Friday, we cut a 200-foot trench around the small plot that we've created just for this year. And, you know, I couldn't have done that without a friend. And then on Saturday, another buddy came over and we put the fence up. Then Sunday was the fun day. That was a planning day. And that day we got some women involved, including my wife and her yoga partner and another woman. So no, she helps emotionally and financially, but not too much hands on.
So in the long term, you plan on this project being your means, your income.
This is my intention, is to make this be my full-time job, and whether I do it in winter or not do it in winter, because there's a lot of new stuff going on in winter farming in these kind of extreme environments of like Cleveland and Maine and Minnesota and Wisconsin, and that's sort of like the new frontier. I'm not going to take on the winter farming until I'm good at like 2.5-3 season farming. But yes, it's meant to be my income. I intend to eventually have a t-shirt, some other things that, you know, will help market myself and differentiate myself from the other urban farmers with a kind of like a little bit of wit and a little bit of kind of like city wit is what I would call it.
How do you plan to turn this from a farm into means of income? Do you plan on setting up a market? Do you plan on taking this stuff to the West Side?
That's okay. Well, let me put on the record: the West Side Market needs an urban farm stand. Let's say that 20 times. The West Side Market needs an urban farm stand. Now, that costs about $600 a month, plus about a $350 insurance policy a year. So it's going to be hard for any individual urban farmer to do that. A urban farmer or a non-urban farmer out in Worcester or Massillon that has, you know, 6 to 10 acres may be able to afford that $600 a month. However, me as an individual with only 17,000 feet, which, mind you, that's one of the bigger farms around, there's a couple people with like 1 acre. I have about a half an acre. We're not going to be able to put out that output to do the $600 a month individually. We could form a co-op. We can maybe get some nonprofit money to set up a stand, something to that effect. But until that happens, yeah, I'm planning on selling at farmers markets, and I really want to do a lot of what's called direct marketing right to the people. There's something called CSA, is Community Supported Agriculture, which a lot of people buy into up front. So in like March, you give a farmer several $100, and then throughout the season, you get a bunch of different produce. I want to do something not as rigid as like that, and I want to create sort of a different business model where I call it almost like a Twitter essay, where I each day or every few days I have like a basket of goods, you know, maybe 2 pounds of tomatoes, 5 ears of corn, I don't know, 2 lettuces, and, you know, couple cucumbers. And with this sort of Twitter account, what I would like to do is be like, you know, have a group of, I don't know, anywhere from 100 to 200 people, maybe start out with just 10 or 15 and say, you know, I have this basket of goods. This is what the basket is. This is what the price. Let me know if you want it delivered or come and pick it up, something to that effect. That's the ultimate business model I want to work on. But initially, I'm probably going to be going through the farmer market route, but I want to do really, really direct marketing.
And I saw on the internet that you have a continuing blog of your farming. Can you go into details about that? Can you talk about it? Can you talk about your use of technology?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, right now, the blog is called The Garden Life and Times of Justin Husher at blogspot.com. I'm actually very soon going to be upgrading the blog to The Farm Life in Times of Justin Husher, and I'm actually going to be changing that to WordPress.com. Blogspot is Google's blog. I don't know who WordPress is, but WordPress, they have a lot more itemizations and a lot more tabs and things. So I could have my blog, and then I could also have like a needs tab. So, you know, I need volunteers, you know, I could use as much compost as anybody can give me. And I would like to have those tabs on this new blog that will be created in the near future. It's a good way of collecting my thoughts. It's almost, you know, like a traditional blog where it's almost like a journal for me. So it kind of it lets me put down my thoughts so that I can kind of forget some things. Like my most recent blog, I wrote the list of soil amendments that I put down on the one single plot that we have this year. And, you know, the soil amendments were, it was a long list, and I could still tell you what they are. 28 gallons or 28 garbage cans of 32-gallon leaf humus, about 2,000 pounds of coffee grinds, 46 pounds of sulfur, and about 35 pounds of rock phosphate. But those are sort of the details that I don't need to remember. And that's the beauty of being able to put it, you know, on Blogspot or technology. I also use Facebook to get people to read my blog. I shamelessly, every time or every other time I put a blog up, I will, you know, also put it on Facebook. And now I'm using even Local Food Cleveland to advertise my blog. Personally, I feel like I'm a really great writer, a lot more interesting than a lot of these other blogs, and that's why I'm doing it for a writing outlet, which is something I used to do in my years ago life. And so it's sort of me doing it for myself, me doing it to create a picture of myself, me trying to give props to my friends who help as much as I can, and also just have a live journal of what I've done and what I've been doing and my emotions in the meantime.
How do most of the people that you've told about this project feel about you trying to do this as a means of income?
It's really quite funny. My friends, you know, the people I hang out with that are, you know, you could say relatively liberal or relatively open-minded or relatively something, they all understand and they're all cool and they're all excited and they're the volunteers that are generally helping me the most. I gave a speech last night at the Friends of Euclid Creek about urban farming, and I gave out all my business cards, so I forgot to bring them today because normally I have a stack and last night I got rid of them all. But my business card up at the top is a picture of me with the pitchfork, with a little barn, with the Crooked River, with a Cleveland background in the background. And up at the top in like really big loud letters, it says a farm in Cleveland with an exclamation point and a question mark. And that's pretty much the reaction when you're not talking to these liberal folks that you get. They go, a farm in Cleveland? Like what the heck are you talking about? And eventually, you know, you have to explain, you know, there's all this land bank land. This is a viable economic opportunity. The other day we were at the farm and some gentleman from down the street was like, what are you guys doing here? I'm like, I'm putting in a farm. He's like, a farm? He's like, you mean a community garden? I'm like, no, not a community garden, not a community garden at all. A farm. And he's like, a farm? Then he said it again, you mean like a community garden? I'm like, no, dude. I'm like, you see that Just Wireless store across the street? And he's like, yeah. He's like, they sell phones and they sell cell phone plans. I'm going to be growing vegetables and I'm going to be selling vegetables for a profit to eventually earn a living. So sometimes you have to be that forward with people so that they get it. And that's often the reaction I get.
Have you had any community outreach? Usually that's a question we ask for people who are doing community gardens, but have you talked to other people in the community surrounding it? Have people come up to you?
People come up to me all the time. I'm really doing this a lot more as an individual for my personal self, for my own personal business model. I really believe in like that Chinese adage where it was like, you know, give a man a fish, he eats for a day; teach a man a fish, he eats for a lifetime. So I'm shamelessly doing this for myself. And if I can create an economic opportunity for myself that I can eventually share with other people, I really hope to do that. I want that to happen. But again, if I can't do it for myself, I'm not going to be able to do it for the community. In regards to the people's reaction around the farm, everybody has been really, 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 really positive. Little skateboarder kids come up and ask me questions all the time, and then they do their kick trick flips around sort of whenever we come out. The neighbors next door are pretty excited about it. There's a canine police officer that comes by, it seems like, every other time and just chats my ear off. So I'm getting a lot of good positive feedback from the community. There's, you know, I'm going to be doing little things for the community. Like one of the things I want to do is I've been a bus rider in my life, and there's an RTA stop right on the property, and there's no stool, there's no bench, there's nothing like that. And by the end of this year, I already have the bench. It just needs cleaned up a little bit. We're just going to be putting a bench down for the RTA riders, which it's a small thing, but at the same time, I know riding the bus isn't the greatest thing in the world. And if you have a place to sit down, it just makes it all the better. So we're doing things like that in the meantime.
Have you discussed this as a viable means of income with other urban farmers? Have you communicated with any of them to get some?
Oh, absolutely. One of the other newbie urban farmers that I work with a lot, who's not part of the Reimagining Cleveland grant, is a gentleman named Ryan Kennedy, who's a little bit younger than the rest of us, and he's just full of spirit and spunk. And he and I bounce ideas off of each other like all the time. I've only known the guy for 2 months and we're already becoming really good friends. But between like the localfoodcleveland.org and the E4S meetings, there's always a lot of other individuals to bounce ideas off of and, you know, see what we can do. So absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you had any problems with people dumping? You have the RTA stop right there. Pollution? Do you need to?
There is a bit of trash on the frontage of the lawn that we pick up. I guess that's probably one of the things that's actually eventually going to go also hand in hand, is we're going to put a garbage can there, which isn't a big deal, but, you know, at least there's not that trash. So that is going to be another, like, secondary small community thing. I've heard of people, literally, this one girl named Lynn Rodeman or Lynn Thompson, depending on what she goes by that day. On her spot, someone dumped a 120-pound Rottweiler dead in a rolled-up carpet. And I haven't had anything like that. I've had, like, three little bags of trash. One of the properties, I'm using a land bank property and a Bel Air Puritas Development Corporation piece of property that are together. And in the meantime, for the last couple of years, Bel Air Puritas Development Corporation has really kept the property extremely clean. So my property, compared to what I hear a lot of people have, is like awesomely clean. There's low levels of lead, like a non-concernable low levels of lead. You know, there's been some dumb trash, like, you know, beer cans and Twizzler trash, but there's been nothing extreme. I haven't gotten there and had a refrigerator or a rolled up Rottweiler or anything like that. Thank God.
What sort of produce do you plan on producing?
Okay, it's going to be a classic vegetable farm. I'm going to be really focusing on a lot of us are doing this, though, a lot of heirloom varieties. So instead of just your classic Roma, I'm growing something called the Principe Borghese, which I might be totally saying that wrong. It's a Italian word. I don't know. And what that is, it's basically it's the Italian heirloom Roma. So like that's like what you would get often in Italy in terms of like a sun-dried tomato. I like color, so I have probably like 20 plus tomato cultivars this year. So it's going to be a lot of different color, a lot of different options. I really like bok choys. They're quick, fast, and grow really easy. So there'll be a lot of bok choys in the spring. Right now, we got a little bit of a late start, so I'm not going to be doing lettuces this year, but there'll be a lot of variety lettuces next year. One of the things I'm really going to be proud of once it gets finished, which is going to be several years from now, is I'm putting in a pawpaw orchard, which pawpaws are a fruit that are native to North America. It was George Washington's favorite dessert. They are the only temperate species of an otherwise only tropical plant, and they taste like something like a mango meets a papaya meets a banana. And in our crazy last 50 years of totally crappy commercialization of food, they've got basically thrown to the wayside because they bruise really easily, like bruise easier than a banana. So large-scale marketing and traveling basically went down the drain. But with this whole new counterculture and really what I call decommercialization of our food system, things like pawpaws are really coming back in full force. There's a pawpaw fest down in Athens every year that really celebrates pawpaws, and I'll have anywhere from a 6 to 8 small micro orchard. So I'm really excited about that. There's also going to be a raspberry patch, and there's also going to be this other thing called a hardy kiwi, which is from Siberia. It's a relative of the normal kiwi that we know of, It grows the size about of a grape, and once these vines apparently get settled, it can produce anywhere from like 50 to 100 pounds a year of fruit. But that takes about 4 to 5 years to get fruit. So it's, you know, you got to put your time in. You just got to wait a little bit.
You mentioned the counterculture. Do you view yourself as part of the counterculture?
Oh, absolutely. I just think everybody is really... I've never liked corporations my entire life, and I've tried to fit in corporate environments, and it's never worked. I can never small talk enough. I can never, you know, trim my beard enough. I can never say a bad idea is a good idea enough to ever fit in a corporate environment. I think people are just really, really sick of corporations, whether it's BP and this oil spill, Toyota and their brakes, banks and all the crap that they just did over the last 3 years. And then when you see movies like, you know, Super Size Me or Food Inc., people are outraged that they're eating this crap all the time. And that's why this urban food movement, in my opinion, is really getting going, is people in the urban environment are educated enough to see these things and to point them out and to recognize them. And that's why urban farming is blowing up right now, is because it's a reutilization of the space we already have. Plus, it's a direct counter reaction to this corporate food system that's just generally not been good. Like, there's three tomatoes at Giant Eagle: Aroma, some basic little slicer, and then some hydroponic thing from Canada. And there's over, you know, there's probably over 500 varieties of tomatoes, and people just want more out of their food. And we're at a point where we can do that. You know, we have the internet, we can read about anything, we can see anything. So, yeah, I feel I'm part of this counter culture, but it's not a counter culture like hippies or anything. It's just a reaction to what's happening in modern society.
Do you feel like most of the people involved in this Reimagine Cleveland project are counterculture, or just certain aspects of it?
I think most people who are doing at least the urban farming part of it are. I would probably even say the community gardens are. I would even say, yeah, like I would say pretty much everybody. And, you know, counterculture might be an extreme word to use. I don't want to say we're going to go overthrow the government or anything, but it's a movement based on what has happened in society with food and corporations. And a lot of people are just tired of that. And I think, you know, some people might be doing it solely for an economic means, and that's fine, that's great. But I think that economics means is often coupled with a reaction that people are tired of what, you know, Giant Eagle and corporations are giving us.
Can you go into details about your relationship with the Reimagining Cleveland grant and the whole process that you had to go through to get the land and
Okay. Yeah, it was a process. It was definitely a process. In fact, I took most of last summer trying to find my piece of land. The Reimagining grant was to develop land bank properties in the city of Cleveland, of which I think there's like 4,000 or 3,500. So there's a plethora of properties. So on a surface level, you'll think, my gosh, that should be kind of easy. However, I live on the west side, which means I want something on the west side. And I also wanted something safe and secure, which for the grant, they had to be in neighborhood stabilization program areas, which, you know, if you wanted to get rid of all that wordage, you could say bad areas of Cleveland. So I would say I spent about a month and a half looking for my property. Sometimes you roll into neighborhoods, and as soon as you roll into the neighborhood, there's, you know, people with pit bulls just kind of staring you down. They know you're not a neighborhood car, and you just feel unwelcome and uncomfortable. Initially, my goal was to find some weird private nook and cranny in Cleveland, which there's one off of 42nd and 90 that was really fit that bill. But for some reason, basically, me and another grantee wanted that property, so I dropped out, and then she dropped out of that property because the neighbor actually took the property, because the neighbors have sort of like almost eminent rights to these land bank properties if it's next to their land. So the private is initially what I really wanted. Then there's this in-between stage, which is what I would call like public, which is sort of like right in the middle of a neighborhood, or private public in the middle of a neighborhood. And those are the ones where you got like a lot of the looks, the stares, the pit bull owner looking at you. And also in a lot of those private public neighborhoods or land bank lots, they're basically a lot of kids' trash cans. You know, you find just mounds of trash, condoms, needles, crap like that, stuff you don't want. So near at the end, after doing this for a while, I decide, gosh, you know, let's go public, so public that it's ridiculously safe, ridiculously secure. And that's what I found on my West 130th property. It's like there's so many, there's probably thousands of cars that go by my property every single day. And it's because it's so visible, I feel more secure there than pretty much any of the properties that I looked at. Then that's the property finding, I guess. And then in terms of the grant, that was sort of another thing. This grant kind of came out of nowhere. It was federal stimulus funds, and you know, all the guidelines weren't initially written. So it was like a lot of phone calls to Lila Zaltner and Bobby Reichtel at Neighborhood Progress to try to see what the grant was going for exactly, to try to cater it to the I guess the grantee awarders as much as possible. And that was a lot of phone calls, a lot of reading between the lines, a lot of just follow-up questions.
Have you had any problems with the process, with the acquiring funds for any certain aspect of your project?
Yeah, the whole thing has been ridiculously I say ridiculously difficult, but I want to clarify that you could call it bureaucracy or you could just call it the laws that are on the books. And if I wanted to complain about it, I would call it bureaucracy, but I'm not complaining. It's just there's laws, and in my own westernized view, I wish I was special in regards to the laws, but I'm not. And that's just the fact of the matter, nor is any of the other 51 grantees special. So the city of Cleveland gave us these grants, and you know, most of us had things like sheds, fences, trees, things like that on our, you know, proposal. So the city of Cleveland gave us a thumbs up to do these things. However, on their bylaws, on their books, no one other than the city of Cleveland could technically put what's called a permanent improvement on a land bank land, which included sheds, fences, and trees, which I would say at least 50 out of the 52 grantees, and that's just my guess, probably had at least one of those, if not all of those, in their grant. So there's been, you know, some waiting for laws to be changed. Also in regards to the grant itself, because it's federal money, the fiscal agent has to at least get 3 separate bids for everything. And that wasn't stated clearly to us grantees. And when I say everything, I mean like a nut and a bolt needs to be bidded out, like a half cent product that, you know, for whatever reason. So I think had a lot of us known that going into this, we probably would have only done big ticket items in our proposal, like a fence, a shed, a tiller, you know, maybe a ton of peat moss versus something else, instead of all these line item, very small, minuscule, detailed things. So it's been a little bit difficult. It's been a little bit patient. I don't know how the other folks are doing this year, but I think a lot of people are waiting for the reimagining money to finally come in, and I want to do this full time. And basically, where I wanted to have like 10 to 12,000 feet in production this year, I've pared it back to my 2,000 feet. And once things come, you know, that's going to happen. But in the meantime, you know, I got to do it myself in the meantime. So that's where, you know, I rented a trencher for $140. I bought fencing for $300. And yeah, it would have been great if I could have had my fence already and had these things done already. But at the same time, it's, I guess, pardon the expression here, it's like shit or get off the pot. And that's basically what I did the last weekend.
I saw on your website that you'd put a fence up this weekend, and you had talked about red tape involved with putting up a fence. How did you get permission to put that up if all this red tape was in place?
About 2 weeks ago, the red tape got repealed. That's what it was.
So you have all these expenses out of your pocket, and do you will the funds that you get later in the year
reimburse me? No, they will not. And that's fine. I expected to put money into this project. I'm doing this as a business. If I can't, you know, ante up some of my own cash, then what am I doing this is what I think. It's just, you know, monies could be spent in different ways at different times, and it's more of an it is what it is kind of thing. I know I'm going to get my fence. I know it's going to happen. It's just it didn't happen in my Western mindset perfectly timely manner in March or April. It's probably going to happen more like July, August. So it'll be, it's a little slower going than what any of us expected. And that's just what it is. And, you know, anytime you ask other people for help, and you could say Grant is definitely asking other people for help, you got to deal with other people. And anytime you deal with other people, it's always going to be longer winded. It's always going to be harder. It's always going to be more difficult to coordinate. And I kind of had a good feeling that was going to be the case going into it, that, you know, this we're kind of pioneers. No city's actually given people money to take neighborhood stabilization program money directly to the people to do something with. Normally they take the money, deconstruct houses, build a park, and, you know, the city is doing this entirely themselves. But the city of Cleveland is being really, really, really progressive and is actually feeding it to people so that they can do their own thing. So we've got to all expect there was going to be some hitches along the way. And I kind of felt like I knew that going in. I didn't know to what extent that was going to happen, but I knew that going in.
What do you see from the future? The grant ends eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the grant ends, and a lot of what I'm using my grant for is capital costs. It's, you know, things like a shed, things like a fence. A 5-foot chain link fence costs like $5,000. So that's really, really helping me out. I have a lot of background myself. You can, you know, there's a lot of means for like things like leaf humus and coffee grinds so that you can amend your soil organically for free. And you just have to recognize those resources and use them as best fit. I think once I get my infrastructure in place, I'm already feel like I've hit the ground running. And once that's in place, it's only going to make me run faster. So eventually it ends. But at the same time, so far, everything I've done is almost out of my own pocket. And I feel pretty happy and pretty confident about what I've done so far. So I only see once the grant ends just almost being almost a little more untethered so that I can, you know, actually really focus on the farm and the farm business. Because even right now, like, everybody's redone their budget, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. And every time you redo your budget, it's, you know, another thinking process. It's just another prioritization process. And that takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of energy that, you know, I could be farming or marketing.
After the grants, or do you get the ability to purchase the land from the land bank? How does that work?
That's a great big question, and that's sort of a weird... That's how the grant was built. That's how it was presented in, like, the EcoWatch newspaper. However, on the books, when you talk to the city of Cleveland's attorney, James Downing, it's still kind of like that. But the city... Basically, if the city of Cleveland has something they can do better with that, they have all the means in the world to take it away from me. So it's sort of an I don't know situation. The way it was presented in the Reimagine Cleveland ad was sort of like, you know, a dollar title, that kind of thing. Maybe a $100 title, really inexpensive. However, as a farmer with a business enterprise, the city of Cleveland, as it stands right now on the books, would sell that property to me for the appraised value, which it's being appraised at like $5,000 to $6,000. If I was the neighbor and was to buy the property, it's like a $1 title transfer fee. Then there's some other middle ground where it's $100, but as a for-profit business, it's the appraised value. And that's the other thing that's questionable. Is it the appraised value now when there's like nothing on it, or is it the appraised value in 5 years after I put a fence and maybe had a water main installed, which that's going to make it go up to, I don't know how much, but a lot more than what it's worth. So it's a big question. It's as a businessman, it's a uncertainty that I consider a very high risk. In the meantime, I will be looking for other properties just so that I can, if the city of Cleveland wants to pull it from me, I can have a backup plan. Like, I plan on having other properties in the meantime anyway, but I definitely need to have a more secure business model. The city of Cleveland may be changing all their, they may change all of that. And it sounds like, speaking to the attorney, James Downing, that that's something that they will be working on for us urban farmers, is to change the laws on the books. But, you know, until it happens, it hasn't happened. So it's a great big, I don't know. But let's just hope so.
do you plan on growing? If you get this lot up and running with a farm on it, do you plan on expanding to other lots and trying to run them all yourself at the same time?
What I would like to have is probably like 2 to 4 lots. That would be awesome. And I would like to do some kind of crop rotation between the lots. I kind of want to have like a pumpkin patch lot. That's sort of something I want to create, as a pumpkin patch lot. And then maybe the next year it could be a more of a vegetable lot. But yes, that is something I would like to do. In terms of organizing that, like pumpkins, they don't really need too much. They, you know, they're kind of a low maintenance crop. So you could do something like have a pumpkin patch while having a more highly work oriented other vegetable garden at another property. So absolutely. I really, back in 98 when I got my botany degree, I really wanted to, the farm I wanted was a mushroom farm. And not too many people are doing that around here yet, so I eventually want to get back into the mushroom growing as well.
I saw that on your website.
Okay, did you? Okay.
Yeah. Earlier you had mentioned coffee grinds and other sort of reusable refuse. Do you go to businesses, do you collect this from, you know, coffee shops and say, I'll take your...
Yes, I at this point I'm collecting solely from the Loop Coffee House in Tremont. I've probably collected since November at least 2,000 pounds of grinds from them. I actually live in Lakewood, and one of my good friends lives above the Bela Dubby coffee shop, and she's going to start collecting their grinds for me as well. Eventually, I would like to have some kind of bigger composting. Right now, I'm just feeding the grinds right into the dirt and tilling them in. But eventually, there will be some kind of elaborate composting system on the property. What I'd like to do is basically, the cross street I farm on is Sprecher. And eventually, what I would like to do is basically, in the fall, collect everybody on Sprecher's leaf debris in the fall and just bring that to the property and compost it on site. Right now, I go to a place in Avon Lake for my leaf humus. It's free to Lorain County citizens, and I'm a Cuyahoga County citizen. But no one checks, so I get it all for free there. But eventually, I want to, you know, do it on the site, and that will be happening in the future.
Are there any other aspects of this process that you'd like to discuss, or you would like? To go into further detail.
I guess if you want to do it, have your heart in it. If you want to do it, read as much as humanly possible. I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward to the whole process and to selling vegetables and to making what I see is a real change in the corporate food systems that we so far live in. But nothing specifically. I could probably elaborate on a more detailed question versus an open-ended one.
Are you still as excited now as you were when you first?
I'm more excited now. Yeah, especially with getting the plot done over the weekend. For a little while, the kind of the long-winded laws and the slowdowns were kind of getting to me emotionally. I could even say I was, you know, maybe not clinically depressed, but I was about 2.5 months ago, I was, you know, kind of minorly bummed, thinking like, you know, I spent a year of my life trying to put this plan together and now it's not happening because of things that are out of my control. And that was sort of a setback. But at the same time, you know, I just had to be patient and persevere and do things on my own in the meantime. And that's what I've done. And now that the plot's up and running, I'm like giddy as all punch.
Was it more work than you thought it would be?
No, I knew it was going to be a lot of work. Anything worth doing is worth doing for a lot of work. Maybe the reorganization of the budget multiple times was kind of a lot of work. Our fiscal agent and the bidding process, which I'm not technically a part of, I see that as a lot of work. And that's really difficult. But again, that's out of my hands. That's not me. That's our fiscal agent who's, you know, going crazy trying to bid out a nut and a bolt. So it's not been more work. It's just been more extreme patience than I thought I would have to exude.
The only other question I have real quick, it's a departure from what I've been asking you. Do you know anything about the history of the plot?
Well, for all the plots in this project, they had to, and I guess that was part of the Neighborhood Stabilization Program grant, they had to have a house on the property formally. So there were two houses on the property. That's the extent of it. A friend of mine said he was doing research and said there was a laundromat on it, but it turns out the laundromat was across the street. There was never a laundromat on the property. So there were two houses. The little skateboarder kid across the street was telling me it was like a drug dealer's house, and like literally the feds busted the property overnight one night. The guy wasn't there. He got tipped off and basically abandoned the house. And the kid was like, yeah, there was all sorts of cool stuff. There was like a snowmobile that he left. And so apparently he left a bunch of stuff, but I don't know what else.
Last question. We understand the NPI did a series of workshops in the summer of 2009. Did you attend one of these neighborhood progress workshops?
Yeah, I went to one, I forget the name of the church, but it's on Detroit and like the 114th Cross Street on the west side, given by Bobby Reichtel. And it was just kind of an overview of the whole process. For me, one of the major questions, because I'm actually a Lakewood resident, was, is this open to people other than Cleveland residents? And, you know, I could read all the between the lines, and it seemed like it was, but the workshop, you know, alliterated that fact. And it seems like pretty, I don't know this for a fact, but it seems like most of the other grantees that weren't Clevelanders were Lakewood residents. So it seems like there's something going on in Lakewood where people kind of relate to this. Then I also had a meeting with Bobby Reichtel that she showed me how to use this amazing website called ohiogreenprint.org. And that's basically a website of all these properties in Ohio, but it's all Ohio, but it's really focused in Cuyahoga County, and it has what's called layers. So you could have like an abandoned home layer, you could have a land bank layer, you could have a Cuyahoga County land bank layer, you could put cross streets, you could put freeway. It's just an awesome resource. And that's how, you know, initially you scoped out properties. You went to this website and kind of just looked for land bank properties that were in your area, and kind of checked them out from there. So I went to one of the workshops, and then I had a private meeting with Bobby Reichtel to show me how to use the ohiogreenprint.org website.
Did you learn anything?
Well, yeah, I learned how to use the ohiogreenprint.org website, which, you know, was key for me finding my property. Then I also, you know, learned that a Lakewood resident could apply for this grant and still be a grantee in the meantime as well, be awarded a grant.
I think that's it. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to this plot coming up. Yeah, I'm glad to hit the ground moving finally. I'm amped. I'm excited. The t-shirt's going to be really cool. I'm going down to Jack Prince right after this to find the girly girl shirt that is going to fit. There's a lot of women in this scene, so I'm going to try to make a women's fitted t-shirt versus some type of unisex shirt so I can actually sell some t-shirts. So,
all right, I think that's it.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you.